So I tell you to take out your folder and look at it, but you won't be able to because the room is dark. The room is dark on purpose, so please don't go back and tell them to turn on the lights. It's off on purpose. We want it that way. You'll know more later. So later on today, when you get a chance to pull your paper out, you'll notice down the middle column a list of great Journey Group offerings. Journey Groups are the vehicle that we use around here that helps us not only to get into the Bible and get just learn more about God, but we use that vehicle because we get information that's true, but we get it in the context of relationship. Truth is, these days, we truly live in the information age. You could go online and get great information all the time. But the thing that really brings all of this to a transformational place is when we learn in the context of relationship. And so look at that list of offerings, and if you've never tried a group, why don't you try one this spring? Most of them are lasting about 6 weeks, six sessions. Not a huge commitment in terms of time, but it may just be something that as you go ahead and try one, you'll find that you're not just learning about the Bible, but you're actually, in the context of relationship, you're learning something more about yourself, about your God, and about other people. So give it a try. Look at that later and learn more. We're a couple of weeks away from Easter, believe it or not. 2 weeks away, 2 weeks from this Sunday. So next Sunday's Palm Sunday, and that's going to be a special day for us. We like to celebrate the coming of Jesus into Jerusalem. And then throughout that week that's commonly called Holy Week, we have several things that we do. We gather together on Good Friday at 7 o'clock. And that evening, it's a really somber night. We take it real, real, real low key. In fact, we try to imagine ourselves much like those disciples who have, they placed their Jesus in the grave, and they truly believe it's done. That is the last they will ever see him. And so we sit for a while in the heaviness of that, in the reality of his death. Sometimes as evangelicals, we're too quick to jump to Sunday and forget there was this Friday that just felt hopeless and sad, like it was all over. And you know, as we enter into that sense of a lack of hope, we start to learn something about what's going on in our own lives. So join us for that evening. Bring someone along. Then we have, on Saturday, we call it Silent Saturday. We're just doing this in the morning this year. But you have the chance to come at different time segments. You decide when. And sit for an hour. And there's a media presentation going on that walks you through what happened in the life of Jesus in those final days. And we get the chance to be present with him, really, as we imagine him in the grave. And of course, we know the rest of the story, awaiting resurrection. But for us, we leave him in the grave. We leave him there and get an idea of what it's like to have that degree of hopelessness. Our Savior is gone, which brings Sunday's celebration just an amazing point where we know he truly is alive and he changes our lives. So to all three events, we encourage you, if you've got someone out there that you think could benefit from this, invite them along. Invite them along. We'll be talking more about that in a minute. So I've been asking a lot of people what they did for spring break, and a lot of people had a lot of fun. There were tremendous opportunities to get out of town. Some of you stayed in town and did things like that. Well, one of our spring break teachers spent some time putting together a video that I think you're going to enjoy, kind of telling us about something that happened last summer and that's coming here really soon. Watch this. Yeah, that was fun. That was not our standard Lent transition video, right? And you're kind of going, where'd all like the somber quietness go and all that? Well, this is a piece of Lent too, right? A piece of this is not just what Jesus has done for me, but the fact that I now have the chance to share with someone else what Jesus has done. And believe it or not, it's April. which means in 28 days, we're already starting to register kids for camp this coming summer. It's just, where'd that winter go, right? Here we go. We're ready once again for this opportunity to share the life-changing gospel with a group of kids, some who may have never heard it before, some who have heard it 100 times. And maybe this is the time, maybe this is the time that their eyes will be opened, their ears will be ready to hear, and they'll come to that place of trusting in Jesus as the forgiver of their sin and the leader of their life. As we continue looking at the waves, continue thinking about the rhythms of Lent, this up and back, and what that's all about for us, what we want to lean into today is we're going to lean into the story. What does it mean to lean into the story of the gospel? What would it look like for us to really live into the story of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus? And in order to learn about that and understand it better, we're going to listen to a story today from John chapter 9. I'm using a version of the Bible called The Voice. I really enjoy this version. It's fresh and contemporary. And they actually write it in such a way that it feels a little bit like a movie script. So you have kind of this ongoing up and back dialogue that just brings some freshness to stories that we've heard many, many times. So as we read this passage in John 9, we hear these words. While walking along the road, Jesus saw a man who was blind since birth. So just get that. Never, ever sighted. Never saw a tree, never saw a flower, never saw his mother's face. Has no idea what the world looks like. Completely blind. Teacher, who sinned? Who is responsible for this man's blindness? Did he commit sins that merited this punishment? If not his sins, is it the sin of his parents? Neither. His blindness cannot be explained or traced to any particular person's sin. He is blind so the deeds of God may be put on display. While it is daytime, we must do the work of the one who sent me. But when the sun sets and the night falls, this work is impossible. Whenever I am in the world, I am the light of the world. After he said these things, he spat on the ground and formed a mixture of saliva and dirt, mud, which he smeared on the blind man's eyes. Go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam. Siloam means sent, and its name reminded us that his healing was sent by God. The man went. He washed. He returned to Jesus, now eyes alive with sight. Then neighbors and others who knew him were confused to see a man so closely resembling the blind beggar running around. Isn't this the man we see every day sitting and begging in the streets? This is the same man. This cannot be him. But this fellow bears an uncanny resemblance to the blind man. I am the same man. It's me. How have your lifeless eyes been open? Well, a man named Jesus approached me and made mud from the ground and applied it to my eyes. Then he said, go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam. I went and washed, and suddenly I could see. Where is this man who healed you? I don't know. The townspeople brought the formerly blind beggar to appear before the Pharisees the same day Jesus healed him, which happened to be the Sabbath. The Pharisees began questioning him, looking for some explanation for how he could see. He smeared mud on my eyes. I washed. Now I can see. God can't possibly be behind this man because he is breaking the rules of the Sabbath. How can such a law-breaking scoundrel do something like this? The Pharisees were at odds with each other about whether Jesus' power was from God or from the devil. they looked at the blind man again. What do you say about this man, about the fact he opened your eyes so you could see? Oh, I have no doubt this man is a prophet. Some of the Jews suspected the whole situation was a charade, that this man was never blind. So they summoned the man's parents to testify about his condition. Is this your son? Do you testify that he has been blind from birth? How, therefore, does he see now? Oh, we can tell you this much. He is our son, and yes, he was born blind. But his new sight is a complete mystery to us. We do not know the man who opened his eyes. Why don't you ask our son? He's old enough to speak for himself. The man's parents were a bit evasive because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders. It had been rumored that anyone who spoke of Jesus as the anointed one would be expelled from the synagogue, so they deferred the thorny question to their son, and the Pharisees called on him a second time. Give God the credit. He's the one who healed you. All glory belongs to him. We are persuaded this man you speak of is a sinner who defies God. If this man is a sinner, I don't know. I'm not qualified to say. I only know this one thing. I was blind. And now I see. What did he do to you? How did he give you sight? Listen, I've already answered all these questions, and you don't like my answers. Do you really need me to say it all over again? Are you actually thinking about joining up with him and becoming one of his followers? You're one of his followers, but we follow Moses. We have confidence that God spoke to Moses, but this man you speak of is a mystery. We don't even know where he comes from. Isn't that ironic that you, our religious leaders, don't even know where the man comes from, yet he gave me sight? We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does respond and work through those who worship him and do his will. No one has ever heard of someone opening the eyes of the blind who have been blind from birth. This man must come from God. Otherwise, this miracle would not be possible. Only God can do such things. You were born under a cloud of sin. How can you, of all people, lecture us? The religious leaders banned him from their presence. Jesus heard what had happened and sought out the man. Do you believe in the Son of Man? I want to believe, Lord. Who is he? You have seen his face with your own new eyes, and you're talking to him right now. Lord, I do believe. I do believe. The man bowed low to worship the healer of his eyes and his soul. How do we lean into the story the way the blind man leaned into the story? When you look at the miracles of Jesus, you begin to discover that Jesus had a method behind his miracles. There was a reason for his miracles. He wasn't just like a random miracle doer, okay? He didn't see someone in a ditch and just go, I'm going to get you out of the ditch. There was a purpose behind his healing. Lame feet walked, deaf ears heard, blind eyes saw. Sometimes people were raised from the dead for a reason. There was a reason behind the miracles. And if you read the last part of the chapter, part of what you know, part of the reason he liked to heal blind eyes is because they gave us a great analogy for a spiritual truth. We are all born into this world spiritually blind. Every one of us. There is no one who is born with perfect spiritual sight. It's not that you're born with spiritual sight and it degrades over time. We are all born spiritually blind. And we can go to all the spiritual doctors in the world. We can try every trick on midnight TV. We can do anything and everything, and nothing is going to change the fact that we are spiritually blind. We are unsighted, and we need help. And part of leaning into the story is to understand that there is someone who exists who is able to miraculously make mud, put it on our life, and help us to see. Jesus can take that spiritual blindness that we have, that inability to see, and through his death, burial, and resurrection, through the application of his blood in our life, we now have the ability to spiritually see. And as you lean into the story, so it's not just that I know I'm spiritually blind. It's not just that I know I need a healer. But I promise you, if you are a person who's sighted in a world full of blind people, you're going to start having some other blind people saying, how'd you do that? How'd you come to be able to see? And part of leaning into the story is telling other people about this great healer, this miracle worker. And here's what I love about what the blind man does. It's incredible. He doesn't go off for 3 years to seminary and learn everything he can about Jesus. He doesn't study Greek and Hebrew for the next decade. He doesn't study every ounce of the Old Testament that existed at that point. He just looks at these guys and says, I don't know. I don't know if he's a sinner. I don't know. Here's what I know. I couldn't see before. The guy put mud on my eyes. Go wash your eyes. And now I can see. Now that doesn't give us an excuse for ignorance about Jesus. We're supposed to learn about him. We're supposed to grow. We're supposed to know more than we did before. But I think part of what the blind man teaches us is that none of us have to be theology experts in order to tell somebody, this is what Jesus did in my life. This is the difference he made in me. And so a piece of leaning into the story is not just realizing that we're blind and not just receiving healing for our blindness and enjoying that for ourselves. But now, as blind people tap us and ask, how can you see? We say, I don't necessarily know all the theological jargon, but here I know this. Before I couldn't see, now I can see, and there's a man who put mud on my eyes. And he made all the difference in the world. I don't know if you've ever known somebody who's blind, had somebody in your life that's blind. I mean completely blind, not going blind, but completely blind. My grandma Pap was blind. She died in 1973, so I was 10 years old when she died. I don't think the whole time I was alive she ever saw. She was diabetic and she became blind. It was not a blindness from birth. Grandma Pap was, kind of an iconic old grandma. She's pretty cool. She seemed like about 689 years old. She died at 73. I mean, 73 is a kid these days, right? But back then, she seemed old as dirt. I mean, she was so old. So old. And she had these slippers. She wore them the whole time I knew her. They were at least 10 years old and probably older than that. And she had kind of those stockings that rumpled down onto your legs. And she wore a house coat and a robe, and she was a babushka lady. So, she had the whole babushka thing going. And she's Hungarian, so she spoke mostly Hungarian, some English along the way, but not an awful lot. And she'd sit in the kitchen in a lawn chair. I think about that now. I'm like, we couldn't get her a better chair. But it was a rocking lawn chair, but it was a lawn chair nonetheless. And there she sat. You go to Grandma and Grandpa Pap's house, and there's Grandma in the kitchen in the lawn chair. And we had this tradition. I got to admit, as a kid, I didn't really like it. And now it's beautiful. Every Saturday, we'd go to Grandma and Grandpa Pap's house. And it didn't necessarily happen as we walked in, but sometime during the night, all of us kids, all four kids, would come and we'd stand one at a time before Grandma Pap. And she had these, you know, frail hands with paper-thin skin. And she'd take our hands and she'd just kind of hold your hand and feel it. And then she'd come up your arm, feel if you were getting any muscles. Feel your shoulder. She'd start this. She'd just touch your face. And as she touched your face, every week, I'm not kidding, her blind eyes would develop tears. And she'd kind of whimper. It wasn't a full-fledged cry. It was kind of a whimper. And I got to admit, as a little kid, it was a little scary, but she'd be kind of whimpering and touching your face. You know, I'm not a rocket surgeon on blindness or anything, but I kind of figured this out. Why did Grandma cry? She just wanted to see. She wanted to know what her grandkids looked like. She just had this longing, this begging in her heart to have a minute to be able to see her kids, her grandkids, the life that was happening all around her while she was bound to that lawn chair in the kitchen. We have people all around us longing to see. They're just feeling their way through life. There's an emptiness and a sadness, a brokenness that's unbearable to them. And we're walking around, we got full vision, right? We're checking it all out. We get it. God's saying, if you're going to lean into this story of the gospel, you're not going to just say, I can see, and use it on yourself. You're going to turn to someone who's not there yet, and as they ask those spiritual questions, you're going to say, you know, I don't know necessarily the answer to every question, but this I know. There was a time that I was just like you, and I couldn't see a thing. And now, I am fully sighted. And I can only give credit to one person, and his name is Jesus. Let's watch the way this works.
This is Nate. Nate became a Christ follower 2 weeks ago and is still a bit giddy about it. Now he's trying not to do cartwheels in public. Nate became a believer partly because of Kim. Yet, oddly enough, Kim and Nate have never met. How is this possible? Well, let's take a look. Kim loved Jesus from an early age, and in college she had a huge impact on her friends. While most of her peers used their college years to, well, experiment, Kim didn't. She remained committed to her faith, and it showed. It especially showed to Lisa, her roommate, who confessed to Kim that she wanted whatever it was that made Kim so strong. Kim shared her faith with Lisa, and Lisa believed. Years later, at Lisa's first real job, she met Thomas. Thomas was hit by a drunk driver when he was 13 and still carried a lot of anger and bitterness. Thomas and Lisa became friends, and it wasn't long before he started going to church with Lisa and her husband. After a lot of studying and searching, Thomas gave his life to Christ. Fast forward a few years. Thomas became a public speaker and was often asked to speak at large events. See, when he became a believer, Thomas developed a new perspective on life. He stopped resenting what had been taken from him and started being thankful for the second chance he had been given. On one particular day, Thomas shared about overcoming hardship and what it means to choose joy. He was so passionate that a number of people were inspired to share a link to his video. The video of Thomas inspired James, too. And if anyone needed inspiration, it was him. James had a ton of issues. He spent most of his life as a passive husband, an absent father, and a horrible friend. That said, no one disliked him more than he disliked himself. But everything changed the night he happened to watch Thomas online. Something clicked, and he knew what he had to do. He surrendered his miserable life to someone greater, and he was forever changed. James fought hard to make up for the lost years with his family. and he also began working with young men who were in danger of throwing their lives away. One of those men was Nate. Nate didn't really know his own dad, and he had no real direction in life, ultimately bouncing from one bad decision to another. Because of that, he often found himself in trouble with the law. No one had ever showed him what it looked like to be a real man. That is, until he met James. James became the first father figure Nate ever had. He learned about honesty, self-control, humility, and integrity, and where those traits come from. 2 months later, Nate publicly declared his belief in Christ. And of course, James was there. Now you can see the connection. Nate was impacted by James, who was influenced by Thomas. Thomas saw an uncommon joy in Lisa, who learned of Jesus from Kim. Kim's relationship with God eventually led to Nate's. Funny how these two people have never met and never will.
I don't know what excites you about heaven. Maybe you're sick of the asphalt in front of your house and you can't wait for a gold street. Maybe it's worship. And for a change, instead of imagining Jesus, you see him face to face. My big kick in heaven is going to be finding out about the person who came to Christ because of something I did and I never, ever, ever met him. Never talked to him. Never around him. But there was something I said, something I did that impacted a person who impacted a person who impacted a person who impacted a person. And you know what? It might not even be someone who's alive now. It might be my great-great-great-grandchild. I don't know. I think a lot of times when we talk about inviting someone to church, or inviting someone along, and, you know, we think it's all about them. It's all about this massive web of relationships. And quite honestly, we never know how God is going to do what God is going to do. But what we do know is he calls us to say this simple thing to people. I once was blind and now I see. Yesterday, Brian and I went trout fishing. It's our annual tradition when he's in town. And I have this lantern and I like that lantern. And this lantern is brilliant for about 3 feet all around me. And then there is darkness. Brian and I couldn't sit right next to each other yesterday. He went a couple of slots down. And so you get there at 5 o'clock to have your good spot at 6:05 when the fish start to bite. He's down there. And I'm trying to figure out how can I get a little more light down to him so that he can see the tip of his rod just in case food is on the other end of the line. And I kind of pulled it out a little bit. I tried different things. But honestly, there was nothing I could do outside of just taking the light over to him. There's nothing I could do to get the light over there. And you know, I'm thinking about this. And I'm thinking about this video. And I'm thinking about today. And I'm like, I can't get the light to him. But what if there was a person there and a person there and a person there? Okay, so do this for me. If you have a flashlight on your phone, get it out. Go ahead. Like he's letting us use our phone in church? Woo! Yeah. Turn on your flashlight. I wish you could see what I'm seeing. This is kind of cool. Ding, 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 ding. You know, it's kind of cool. I mean, the room got a little lighter, right? But nobody's squinting right, unless you were stupid enough. Yeah. Nobody's squinting right now because of the brilliance of the room. Oh, my word. But take your flashlight right now and shine it to the person next to you. Go ahead and just kind of shine it to the person next to you. Not in their eyes. Come on, don't be mean. Now try to shed the light to the person farthest away from you. Go ahead. Send it somewhere. I mean, wow, some of you are really good. What phone do you have? It's better than mine. And I thought I had the queen mother of phones. Yeah, look at this. The fact is, the best light you can shed is to this person here. And you would hope that Adam was not so selfish that he would not shed it to this person here, and this person here, and this person here, right? I think sometimes we think we've got to change the whole world when instead God's saying, would you just have impact right here? And the thing of it is, you don't know what this person's going to say to this person, that's going to say to this person, that's going to say to this person. The part that's ironic is you might have a sighted person and a person who's blind that never receives sight, and a person who's blind that never receives sight, and another one who's blind and never receives sight. Because of that trail, boom, this person receives sight because of the influence along the way. Don't get so short-sighted as to think if you invite someone to Easter and they say no, it was a failure. If you invite a family to come to camp and they say no, it was a failure. If you invite them to Silent Saturday and they say no, it was a failure. Because it's not always about them. It's about them influencing them, influencing them, influencing them. And God doesn't necessarily call us. God does not necessarily call us and say, you have to get that person to do what I want. He calls us to be faithful in just saying, I once was blind and now I see. So, Brian's going to come right now and read the story of another blind man. And I'm going to be nice and share.
Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and said, call him. So they called the blind man. Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. Go, said Jesus. Your faith has healed you. Immediately, he received sight and followed Jesus along the road.
So we'll take 2 minutes to be quiet, just in silence. And I'd love you to answer the question Jesus asked today, what do you want me to do for you? Maybe your answer is, I want to see. Maybe your answer is there's someone in your life who is blind and you're saying, I want, fill in their name, to see. Sit with that. Think about what it would be like to tell them, I don't know all the details of who this guy is, but here's what I can tell you. I once was blind, but now I see. Then communion will come to us, and just so that you're relieved, you'll have light for communion. I don't want you sticking your finger in someone else's grape juice. And then the offering baskets will come after that. But just be quiet right now and reflect on that question. What do you want me to do for you? We'll go from there.
Set a fire down in my soul. I can't contain that, I can't control. I can't control. I want more of you, God. I want more of you, God. Set a fire down in my soul. I can't contain that I can't control. I want more of you, God. I want more of you, God. Set a fire down in my soul. I can't contain that I can't control. I want more of you, God. I want more of you, God. No place I would rather be. There's no place I would rather be.
Thank you. Next song, I encourage you to just think about that person you want to invite to Easter. Think about that family member, friend, coworker that you awkwardly don't want to approach, but you know is stumbling around in the dark, and you know you want to bring to the light. And you're crying out to God, crying out for those dry bones to finally come alive. Will you stand and sing with us?
I'm not always totally in love with being a pastor. I know some of you think I'm a wimp on this, but when you tell a person that you're a pastor, it's one of the greatest conversation stoppers in all the universe. It's amazing how a person will be having fun, their language is colorful, all is wonderful, and then you say, I'm a pastor. Boom, done. You can hear the brakes. So a few years back, I had one of these situations where a person, they, you know, were getting to know me, and they do the old, so what do you do for a living? And man, I do everything I can to just kind of avoid that question. And I'm a good question avoider answerer. So I'm just kind of dancing, tiptoeing, and then they finally say, no, seriously, what do you do? And I say the magic words, and I could hear a mini brake tap. But then the tape brake tap led to stepping on the gas. And lots of questions and lots of stuff that was going on in the person's life. And within a few weeks, the person was sitting here and they're starting to get to know things, getting to know God. And it was just amazing to watch this person, dry bones, come to life. Why do I raise this today? Because I think we walk away from here today maybe with a target in our heads. Here's the person I plan to ask to Easter. Here's the family I need to tell about camp. Here's my plan. And God says, that's nice, great mud pies, but I've got a better plan. And it just may turn out that the person you're supposed to talk to is not even on your radar. And so can I ask you to join in this incredibly spiritual experience of just praying, God, help me to see. Help me to see what you don't see. Allow my ears to be wide open to hear what I don't often hear. And I promise you that if you put yourself in that place of saying, use me, God, he says, all right, let's do that. Let's go with this. Now it may be the person you're supposed to ask is the person you're supposed to ask. Cool. But it may be that it's someone you're not even thinking about yet. Dry bones need to come to life. Eyes need to be open to see. I hope the darkness this morning helped you think about what it would be like to be blind. Frustrating, isn't it? It's just frustrating. It's worse than frustrating when you're completely sightless. There are people in this world, like my grandmother, crying, feeling, saying, I just want to see. We know the one who can give them sight. It's time to share. So let's share. Let's share all we can. All right. You heard enough sermon. Have a great Sunday. We'll see you.